I'm Kara Miller. This is Boston Public Radio.
Some of the most famous fashion designers in the U.S. today have been asked to forecast what Eve will look like in A.D. 2000. One idea is a dress that can be adapted for morning, afternoon, or evening.
We've been wondering for a long time what the clothing of the future will look like. In a 1930s newsreel, designers tried to predict what people would be wearing in the year 2000. Here's what they say men might be sporting.
There won't be any shaving, collars, ties, or pockets. He'll be fitted with a telephone, a radio, and containers for coins, keys, and candy for cuties.
So today we look into that future with local inventors, clothing visionaries, and one of the innovators at the sportswear company Under Armour. And I'm joined first by Kim Blair, who's the vice president of Cooper Perkins and the founding director of the Sports Innovation Program at MIT. Kim Blair, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm wondering, do you feel like we are on the cusp of somewhat of a revolution in what we wear and the kind of fabrics that we use for clothing?
Absolutely. We've seen over the last several years a big influx of new kinds of fibers that perform in all kinds of ways to help adapt to the environment that you're in with wicking and moisture management and odor control, certainly on the performance and the athletic side. Those of us who are old enough can certainly remember going outside running in a cold, wet day in cotton sweats. Fortunately, those days are long behind us. What's happening now, though, is that the fields of material science and chemistry and electronics are all starting to merge now, and the real innovation is starting to happen at the boundary, those boundaries of those areas, so that we're going to see things in the future like more and more integration between those fields of science and engineering, resulting in embedded electronics and eventually smart materials that can really enable clothes to do a lot more adaptable things for the wearer.
Okay, let's break down some of those things. So let's talk about what you think are some of the most cutting-edge kinds of clothes that are on the market right now, which people may or may not have seen yet.
So the what's on the market right now is a variety of materials using different types of polymers, for example, to manage different aspects of behavior. So there's moisture management, there's odor control, and the things that are just coming on the edge now are things like phase change materials and materials that can retain certain shapes or change certain shapes based on conditions and to adapt to the environment.
Okay, so when you say moisture management, this is the idea of you sweat or whatever and that sweat gets wicked away from your body so you're not running around with a sweaty shirt, right?
Yeah, that's one aspect. And actually, interestingly enough, that's been kind of the aspect we've seen in the past thus far. Then you start throwing in the real sports science research and the physiology research and human adaptation. And now some of the research is coming out now is indicating that actually wicking may not be the best. We actually help to keep some of that moisture closer to the skin for control. And so I think what we'll see is as we start to understand in the field of human physiology and performance, we may see some changes in how they manage moisture, for example. But that certainly is the goal, is to keep the right amount of moisture near the skin, depending on the conditions you're in, whether it's high heat, low heat, high humidity, low humidity.
Okay, and now phase change. Now, a lot of people do not know what phase change materials are, but it's a really, really interesting concept and can do a lot for the wearer. So talk a little bit about what is phase change?
At its simplest concepts, a phase change material changes something about itself based on its environment. So it can be probably the simplest example for apparel might be you have a shirt where this phase change material is integrated into the shirt, and perhaps it under certain heat conditions the fibers would elongate and open pores in the shirt to allow better ventilation.
So you really have something that's sort of picking up on the temperature of your body and taking away some heat if it needs to, or maybe restoring some heat if it needs to.
Right? That's exactly right.
Yeah. And I know this has been used. Like, NASA has been using phase change for quite a while. Why was NASA using phase change materials?
We've seen it actually in a lot of places. Phase change materials certainly used in NASA. The other interesting area is where I've seen some demonstrations come out of some of the labs at MIT is in self-tying knots. like for sutures and things like that, examples of things like that. So again, the material changes shape based on the conditions. And so they're developed to solve problems, specific problems that in that particular environment that, you know, you don't have to necessarily have control over. So if you set up the right environmental conditions and match the characteristics of the material to the environmental conditions so that the phase change happens at the appropriate time, then it can be self-activated. You don't have to have control over it.
But do you think it's possible that we're going to have phase change in all sorts of things in the future so that, you know, you're wearing your suit or you're wearing your athletic wear and you're kind of a couple degrees hotter than you should be, and it takes away those couple of degrees and restores them to you when you go back into your sort of air-conditioned office or home?
Well, that's certainly the dream of the future. Uh-huh. A couple degrees actually is hard, harder mm-hmm. than one might think. That's a pretty big swing. And, you know, the other thing is on all of these technologies in sports and apparel or anything like that, particularly on the consumer side, is the science and technology may enable the innovation to happen, but without some insight into user behavior and user's desire for the product, the products may actually never see the light of day. So a good part of that is understanding how people may want to use those products.
Okay, so while we're talking about, you know, stuff you wear and some sports clothes, let's actually listen to Tom Walker, who's the head of Speedo's Aqualab. They're rolling out this new Speedo Fast Skin 3 swimwear. It's going to be used in the 2012 Olympics. And so what you'll hear here is Tom Walker, who's the head of the Aqualab, and then you'll hear the Olympic correspondent for England's Telegraph newspaper who decided, I'm going to try out this new Speedo for 2012 and see what it feels like. Let's listen.
The system of products together, the Fastkin 3 racing system of products together, are designed to work individually at the fastest possible amount that we can get, but also together so that we can create big step changes in what we're able to do in terms of swimming performance.
But I've just tried getting this swimsuit on, and I can tell you that the hardest effort they'll have to put in next summer is getting this thing on. It feels like the tightest thing I've ever worn in my life, but apparently it's a size too big.
So Kim Blair, the question here is there incredible cutting-edge stuff that's going on right now to help athletes perform better? I mean, we saw those full-body Speedos right in the 2008 Olympics, I think. Is there amazing stuff that you see happening for professional athletes?
So what we're seeing now is there's a couple interesting things. We certainly saw the first of the full-body suits back in 2000 at Sydney, and those evolved through 2004, 2008, and then in 2010, FINA, the world body that organizes swimming events, said, no more, we're done. And so now we're back to waist to knees, so the jammer suit for men.
I was wondering why they were less sort of, they do not, exactly, that's right, they go from the waist to the knees. And it's because they thought that the Speedos were giving the competitors too big an advantage.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So the world swimming body decided, geez, you know, this is changing the face of our sport. And so we want to roll it back. We've seen this happen in other sports, too. We saw this happen in cycling in the 1990s with the way bikes were built as well. So it's not uncommon for technology to leap ahead of the sport and then the sport to decide that it's gone too far and pull it back some.
And do you see interesting things happening in other sports besides swimming where the technology is really powerful? That's fascinating that they were like, nope, too much technology. Let's focus on the swimming a little more.
Yeah, so I think what's most interesting in sports coming up to the Olympics is, and sticking to the apparel thing first off, you'll see a lot of very subtle things if you watch carefully with any of the speed sports, with running and things like that, and the way they're using surface textures to control airflow over some of the track suits and things like that. So you'll see some fairly high-tech suits there. I think what's most interesting that people aren't going to see unless they really do some research and go looking around on the internet, for example, is all the background science and engineering that's gone in over the last 4 years in prep for this Olympics. We have technologies available to us now that, you know, literally 4 to 8 years ago weren't here. You know, high-speed digital digital video imaging systems that, you know, capture nuances of motion, miniaturized sensors and electronics now that can capture little bits of information about what individual body parts are doing at certain times during an event. And all this gets folded in with the trainers and the athletes to really go after those last final few percent.
Now, is there a concern, I wonder, that, you know, rich countries like America, maybe China, you know, places that have a lot of money to spend on their Olympic athletes are just going to come up with way better clothes technologically. They're going to put their runners out there with a much better suit.
Well, that's always a common concern, and certainly that was one of the things that back in the 90s when cycling kind of rolled back the rules on the design of bicycles was to level the playing field from a financial standpoint. But the reality of it is today is that, yeah, there are the haves and the have-nots in the sporting world, and I don't think that's ever going to go away. But there's a couple aspects of that, and one is that the multinational brands that supply athletic equipment now, the big brands, they're not going to do things just for one country. You know, they may sponsor a number of athletic teams across a number of countries, and so you'll see a spread that way, as well as you know, there's a little bit of the leveling of the playing field with just the proliferation of technology and information, so it's easier for people to catch information. And you know, there'll always be a little bit of competitive edge there in technology, but it's becoming easier and easier to catch up all the time.
We're joined now by two local entrepreneurs, and before I bring them in, I'm going to give you a little clip from their Kickstarter campaign trailer. Let's listen to it.
As MIT engineers, we designed spacesuits that regulate astronauts' body temperature using what's called a phase change material. We used that same technology in the blend that became Apollo. We're literally taking technology from space and putting it in your shirt. Imagine you're outside on a hot day. Apollo has the power to actually absorb and release heat, like a battery. And by pulling that heat away from your body, it leaves you feeling much cooler.
And we're joined by Gihan Amara Siriwardena and Kevin Rustagi, two of the founders of Ministry of Supply, which is aiming to change dress shirts. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having us. Thanks a lot.
So let's talk about, how did you get this idea that dress shirts, they need to be changed? They need to be fundamentally rethought.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things we looked at is, you know, we were athletes at MIT. Kevin was on the ski team. I was on the cross country and track team. And one of my teammates approached me. He worked at Fidelity, took the T to South Station, and he just sweat through his shirts every day. And so you get to the office really uncomfortable. And so what we thought is, what if we took the fabrics from our running shirts and pour them over to business wear? And so Kevin and I were both really passionate about product design. I worked a lot with Kim on sports technology. And so it's just a natural fit. Let's make that technology transition.
Okay, and Kevin, I can see you are both wearing shirts from your company. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know you put this out there as a Kickstarter trailer. We played a little bit of that, and Kickstarter, for people that don't know, is a crowdfunding mechanism. So you put things up on the web, an idea, and say, if you really believe in this, give me some money, essentially, so that, sure, I can actually make this product a reality. So I know when you do Kickstarter, you have to say, this is the goal. This is how much money I really want to raise, like to make this happen.
Of course.
How much money did you say that you needed to raise?
So from Kickstarter, you're correct. It's a crowdfunding platform, and specifically people pledge or donate money to the cause. In return, at certain levels, they're given rewards. So for us, it was a pre-order of our new shirts. Now, we said we needed $30,000, and that was to produce our next line of dress shirts, which we call Apollo.
Okay. And so now tell me, how much money did you have by the time you ended the Kickstarter campaign?
Well, it was really fortunate. A lot of people liked the idea. So with just under 3,000 backers, as we call them, we had $429,000.
Okay, so you wanted $30,000. You got more than 10 times that. Yeah. How did that happen?
magic pixie dust. It was really exciting. We focused a ton on the story and really communicating the technology, because that's something that really distinguishes our company. It's unique. It's really a product design focus, and bringing technology into an industry that hasn't seen it, that hasn't really seen a dramatic change in decades, if not the past century. So we communicated that very specifically in our Kickstarter video. And we're all about iteration, fast design. And what we actually put up our video for Kickstarter in the beginning, and we thought that it communicated the technology well, but it wasn't perfect. And so during the course of our Kickstarter campaign, actually halfway through, we posted a new main video. And the video, for those who don't know, is one of the main ways that people understand what your Kickstarter project is. So we really focused on the story, as well as a big PR push with that.
And is your sense, Gihan, that what people were really interested in was the notion that that the shirt acts a little bit, and you say this in the video, like a battery, so that it can sort of store some of your heat, and then you go from South Station, where it's really, really hot, to your air-conditioned office, which is really cold, and it gives you back some of that heat that you needed to give away before.
So the fundamental thing about our shirts and designs for products is that your skin is a protective layer for your body, and the whole time it's trying to regulate temperature, moisture, and things like that. And we wanted to design a shirt that was essentially a second skin. And so we looked at a number of features, but the key thing, especially in the summer like right now, is dealing with heat. And we thought the phase change materials, which, was originally developed for NASA spacesuits, was a great way of doing that. It's called thermal buffering. And the phase change materials, they're a battery, and they do that great. But in addition, we also do things like moisture control and odor control as well. So it's really about the same functionality as your skin and making that better and allowing it to complement your body.
Okay, so when are these, so people are listening, when are these dress shirts going to be sort of out there, going to be manufactured, available to people?
Yeah, so we're actually right in the middle of production right now. Much to our surprise, obviously, we were 1,400% above our original pledge amount. And so we had to change some of our manufacturing, but that's fine. We're still keeping it here in the U.S. We do summer production still in New York, but a lot of it we're moving to L.A. We're working with some great manufacturers. They work with some of the top performance gear manufacturers like Patagonia, New Balance, Mizuno.
Now, have big companies gotten in touch with you and said, oh, we're interested in owning this technology or, buying it from you or partnering with you in some way?
Yeah, so we've got a lot of approaches for, licensing our technology, but with Ministry of Supply, we look at this as a whole product design. And so it's not just the material. It's the way we design the shirt. It's how we construct it, how we manufacture it. And so we think that in order to get that full experience, we really have to develop the entire product. And so right now, we're looking to do all their stuff in-house.
We're joined now by Kevin Haley, the Senior Vice President of Innovation at Under Armour Innovation Lab, and he is joining us on the phone from Baltimore. Kevin Haley, thanks for being here.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
So, we're talking here about phase change materials, something new coming to dress shirts. And I wonder if you can talk about, from your perspective at Under Armour, and I know you're sort of always working on trying to develop new things in your lab, what do you see as sort of really cutting edge right now in clothes?
Yeah, I think the phase change materials are fantastic. I think that's really exciting. I think it's the Ministry of Supply has really hit the right market for that, right? You see dress shirts, it's perfect. And I think where we focus is a little closer to the field or the court or, areas of athletic endeavor. And I think there, what we're seeing are really three big trends. One is the quantified self. People want to know what's going on inside their body. They have a great view into what's going on inside their car, but they have very little to tell them about how their workout is progressing or how their progress is coming. And so we have an E39 biometric shirt that addresses that. I think there's another move towards what I just call one garment.
Let me stop you for a second.
Yeah.
The bio shirt. So we know what your dashboard tells you about your car, all these different things, coolant and how much gas you have and how fast you're going. What does the shirt tell you about your body?
So we can pick up various signals from the body using sensors in the shirt that allow you to monitor things like heart rate as well as, different types of movement that can then be filtered through a variety of algorithms which then tell you precisely how hard you've worked out and how that workout has compared to prior workouts. So you can see, am I undertraining? Am I overtrained? Do I need to do more? Do I need to do less?
Okay. Okay, and sorry, and keep going with, so that's one thing, the sort of wearable electronics, it sounds
correct.
Like. And yeah. Then what are the other trends that you're seeing?
The one that I like to call one garment, where I feel like for a long time people have gotten used to the notion of layering, which I really look at as sort of a workaround. It's sort of it's evidence of a problem, that they don't have one garment that addresses all their needs. And I think people get it when you think of outerwear and then a mid-layer fleece and then a, you know, Under Armour cold gear compression mock underneath that. But where I think it gets a little more interesting is just the simple notion of something as simple as a golf shirt. And you know, nobody thinks of that as a problem to solve in terms of one garment. But the truth is, for years, you know, people had a black shirt or a navy blue shirt that they really could only wear on a cold day or a cloudy day. Because if you wore it on a hot, sunny day, you're going to cook. And so we came out with something called Cold Black, which can be used in any color, but it's an infrared reflecting technology. So that if you wear that on a blazing hot summer day, it's going to actually reflect the infrared heat of the sun away from your body and keep you cooler and more comfortable. What I've found, and we haven't had time to study this yet, but what I've found is that when I wear it on that cool day, and this could be, you know, walking to the office or on the golf course, it actually is reflecting some of the infrared heat that your body is losing, and you just feel more comfortable in general. And we've seen it all the way through to even we launched something this year called the Highlight Boot, which is a football cleat that goes all the way up to your calf muscle. But really what we had seen was people were taping their ankles, then they were wearing an ankle brace, and they were putting a low-top football cleat on, and they were taping over that all the way up their ankle. And we said, why can't we do this in one piece? And so we came up with a football cleat that is super light, super flexible, but goes all the way up your calf and eliminates all the taping and the bracing.
So the idea is these sort of these multiple steps. You want to try to avoid things that happen in 4, 5, 6, 8 steps and compact it.
Yeah, we want to come up with elegant solutions that you can have one product. Now, that cleat costs $130, but people are, you know, gravitating towards it, flying off the shelves, because it's replacing the pre-wrap, the tape, the brace, and then the tape over top, and then the whole package ends up being lighter so they can actually run faster. So we're solving a problem for the athlete in one fell swoop instead of with a bunch of little workarounds, which is, at one level, that's the heart of innovation. But at another level, I think over time, people have moved towards a lot of different devices, let's call them, in the footwear example, but really layers in terms of apparel. And I think there's a move towards having one garment.
Okay, and now look ahead for us a little bit to things that are not on the market, maybe 3, 5, 7 years ahead. What do you think that the next few years hold in terms of innovation in clothing?
Yeah, I think there's a lot out there. You know, when I think of one garment right now, I've given you some things that are, you know, pretty simple solutions. I think when you look that far out, I think there's huge opportunity for adaptation, and not human adaptation, but really for that garment to adapt to either the environment or to your physiology. And not just to keep you cooler and lighter and drier like we've been doing for a long time, but really to adapt in a way that maybe it completely changes based on the weather. So the actual insulating properties of the garment or the waterproof or breathable qualities of the garment can change. And really what it gets down to me is looking at an industry. When you look at 10 years out, we've got an industry that's still artisanal. We're still sewing stuff in a way that's not all that different than back in the, you know, the Middle Ages, which was got sewing machines. But it's a Ford Model T production line with sewing machines. And I think moving from that artisanal construction to things like robotics and welded seams instead of sewed seams is really going to open the door to products that can do much more. And then you combine it with adaptive or adaptation in the textile, and Katie bar the door. There's a huge, huge opportunity for companies like Ministry of Supply or Under Armour to really revolutionize the way people dress.
We're talking to Kevin Haley from Under Armour's Innovation Lab about the future of clothing. And Kevin, let me ask you, I know some of the most or some of the very interesting ideas that have come to Under Armour have actually come from people who are consumers, from users, not necessarily from the top down. So talk a little bit about some of those interesting ideas that have filtered into you from the outside.
Yeah, it's one of the funnest parts of my job is we have a very open approach to innovation. We call it open innovation. We're the exact opposite of the not invented here syndrome. We want and encourage outside inventors, companies, really universities, anyone to bring us the greatest ideas out there, and then we will bring them to the consumer. And so we've been very fortunate in that. We had, you know, recently one of the ones that I can talk about is because it's out in the market is something called the Core Short. This is a compression short with this very elastic base material, but then a very strong, almost elastic band that crisscrosses in an X over the pelvis and around the back and over the hips. And it just holds the core together in a way that is something you really have to experience to understand. But we saw it popping up in NHL locker rooms and on some college football teams, you know, one here, one there. And the gentleman who was running it came to us and said effectively, I've been working on this for 20 years. It's a fantastic product. I have no distribution. I have no marketing. I have no brand. He was struggling to sell many units at a $30 price point. And so we actually got involved and made it a little more commercial just in terms of comfort and appearance, but using his overall concept. And the great thing about it is that when push came to shove at the end, the product was no longer covered by his patents, but we really said, you know what? We're going to pay you the royalty anyhow because we want to encourage people to bring us these great ideas. It ended up selling, you know, at Sporting Goods very well at a much higher price point because the consumers were able to see it and feel it and try it on, and it's been a fantastic success for us and for him. And so he's brought us now his next great idea, which we'll be working to bring to market over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and some of the best ideas come from out there in the field where people are doing sports and they're finding that X is a problem and they try to address it and, in their own particular way.
That's right, and we want to be open to their solutions because ultimately we were founded by a guy who was a college football player who didn't like the way that sweat-soaked cotton T-shirt felt against his skin, and he found a better solution. And we believe that there's a lot of people out there like that. We want to tap into that resource.
One more question for you, actually. I know you think that there's a little bit of a revolution coming, not just in clothes, but in footwear. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think the same artisanal construction methods that you see in apparel are probably even more pervasive in footwear. You know, it can take up to 200 people to construct a well-made high-end running shoe, for example. And that's just crazy. So there are innovations galore to be had there. We're working on them right now. We're excited to be able to bring them to the consumer. But I think you're starting to see some of it in the highlight boot, which is a pretty niche product for football players, and there are a lot of them, but it's a pretty narrow age range who actually plays competitive football. But as we start to bring some of those innovations, both on the construction and the process side and on the functionality and the comfort side to the consumer, we think we can really change the industry and revolutionize the way that footwear is made.
Kevin Haley, Senior Vice President of Innovation at Under Armour Innovation Lab, joining us from Baltimore. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Kim Blair, Vice President at Cooper Perkins and at the Sports Innovation Program at MIT. Let me turn back to you. I saw you reacting when he was talking about footwear being this sort of medieval industry, this sort of old, you know, things are done this sort of old artisanal way. Do you see footwear and clothing changing in that sense that they're, you know, very often sewed, maybe not by hand, but by a sewing machine, that kind of thing?
I think the one of the core themes that runs under both the topics in apparel and footwear that Kevin was talking about is what engineers often call system integration. And that is looking to find different subcomponents and different pieces of a given system. You know, maybe it's an apparel piece or a footwear piece that can do more than one particular function. So provide support, provide moisture management, all those things so that then you can you know, revolutionize kind of the way the individual components work through the system integration, maybe get rid of some components. And if at the same time you can revolutionize the manufacturing process and drive some of those steps out, that might be really beneficial. Certainly the other piece in all this that I don't think anyone can ignore is the person that's wearing them. And that's where, you know, we're seeing a big push in a lot of industries around, you know, personalized products, right? And the shirt that's, you know, made for you because your sweat rate is this on a 90-degree day and really drive it into to the really personalized side. And certainly the artisanal manufacturing processes that Kevin spoke of don't lend themselves well to that environment other than, you know, maybe swapping out colors or adding your name to the side of a shoe or something like that.
And do you see that happening? I mean, I think right now, like with Levi's jeans, you can, you know, put your measurements online and they can send you a pair of jeans that are made specifically for you. You don't have to go to the store and try to figure out what doesn't quite work but works best.
Yeah, and that's certainly the tip of it. We've seen that. You know, there's a lot of technologies out there now. I mean, you know, some of the high-end suit shops, for example, have 3D body scanners. So you take it to the next level and you actually walk into this closet effectively that has light scanning, and it literally scans your whole body shape. We've done some research with that with fitting apparel for professional athletes for the NFL and NHL. And again, it's just about, you know, personalized customization.
Gihan, do you see this sort of personalization coming to the clothing industry? Is it going to revolutionize what we wear?
Yeah, totally. And there's been some big innovations in the manufacturing processes that allow us to do that. One of our manufacturers that we've seen, they have a what's called a CNC cutter. It's a robot that actually cuts the fabric out. And right now we're doing, you know, bulk orders, but, you know, one day that can be you send your measurements online, a robot cuts it out. We're also working with another manufacturer that robotically knits the shirt. There are no seams in it. And so it's the future of the design of the clothing, but also how it's manufactured. And it allows you to do some things that you couldn't do before. You can have a shirt that has, you know, 6 or 7 different panels on it that vent differently, that have different functional attributes. So there's personalization and totally new function as well.
And Kevin Rustagi, do you see a lot of firms rising to meet this challenge? I mean, obviously, we all think of these big clothing companies, Ralph Lauren mm-hmm. and Liz Claiborne, and, you know, sure. the kinds of things you see in the mall. Are they all moving this way, or is there going to be just this sort of divergence where there are some companies that are making personalized clothes for you, and then there, we've got mostly, though, people just wearing the sort of old cotton and polyester stuff?
Well, I think what it really comes down to, and I think Kevin Haley put it very well, is open innovation. So if customers want something that is customized, the fact that I think what's going to happen is you're going to start to see companies listening to these customers more. And so it's very interesting for us in our experience, you know, as we had designed the shirt and released it on Kickstarter. And, you know, that's step one, really. It's really interesting because Kickstarter is a platform for messaging directly to us. So we actually had over 1,000 conversations with different customers over the course of 1 month. So will customized clothing be there? I think there's a ton of technology that's coming out. There's a company recently out of Germany that's using your webcam. That's some great stuff that we hope to license in the future. And I think the true innovation comes down to just what Kevin was talking about in terms of actually talking to the customer and listening to them. And I do hope that a lot of the larger companies, adopt those strategies.
And Kim Blair, let me direct the final question to you here. You know, you have talked a little bit about the Star Trek effect, where, you know, obviously in Star Trek, people are wearing the same thing all the time. They're on different planets or doing different things, but they're wearing the same thing all the time. And that's a little bit what we heard from Under Armour. Do you see this notion of being able to wear sort of one layer or one thing and just do many different things, go out in the rain and it repels the rain. Do you see that happening?
Well, that's exactly the one garment concept that Kevin was speaking of, is the one garment that's adaptable for everything. You know, I don't think we're going to see that in next year or maybe even 5 years. I think what we'll see is each of the garments that we own being able to adapt to a larger range of functions. The one garment concept may be quite a while away. But again, the bigger question is, would anybody really want to wear the same garment day after day all the time? And so it really gets back to what your customer wants and how you're going to deliver on that value.
Yeah. figuring out the comfort and fashion nexus.
Right.
I'm Kara Miller. We've been talking about innovations in the fashion industry and in clothing. I've been speaking with Kevin Rustagi and Gihan Amarisiri-Wardena, two of the founders of Ministry of Supply, Kim Blair, the vice president of Cooper Perkins, and the founding director of the Sports Innovation Program at MIT. And I spoke earlier with Kevin Haley, senior vice president of innovation at Under Armour Innovation Lab. Thanks to all of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Today, we're using a lot of shortcuts and catchphrases to describe rifts in America. Phrases like the 99% and the 1%, red states and blue states. But what about the words that weren't intended to push us apart? Kelly Crossley's going to look at the songs, famous speeches, and novels that our leaders have often used to divide us. I'm Kara Miller, and this is Boston Public Radio.